This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Today on Sticks In, we'll talk championship series in the PLL a little bit, some news drop on that front, so we will touch on the event just a little bit about some decisions that have been made there, some rosters, and starting that build-up for the event in February. And then for the bulk of the episode today, we have our first interview of the year. Yale attackman Matt Brandau joins the pod to talk getting ready for his season in New Haven, staying at Yale for the full 4 years, their attack, Coach Shea, we talk a little sixes, we talk a whole lot more. As always, leave a like, leave a subscribe, a download, a rating, whatever your podcast platform of choice allows you to do. Thank you for coming back again. Let's do it. Thank you so much for joining me again on the Sticks In podcast. As I said last week, we're going to get back to our more regular cadence now that the college season's right around the corner, and we're going to focus a little bit more on the college game since that season's getting a little bit closer to us. We are less than 1 month away from Mercer and High Point kicking the season off, and I cannot wait. We've got practices going on this week. We've got social media accounts from across the country of some run tests going on out there, some practice going on out there. I want to thank everybody who shared a run test story with me on social. Some of those were hilarious. Some of those were incredible. It was also interesting to hear from some coaches who thought the running tests were fossils, were things of the past that shouldn't be done anymore. But that's a whole other discussion. Before we get into college stuff today, some PLL news on the championship series came this week. So just for the purposes of context, as I'm sure you know by now, championship series in the PLL is now in its second year. First one was last February. It's taken place at the St. James, which is a very cool indoor facility in Springfield, Virginia. It's like 10 minutes outside of Washington, D.C. It's a sixes event played over the course of about 5 days that features the PLL teams that finished in the top four in the regular season standings from the previous season. This year, those teams are the, now with geographic names, Utah Archers, California Redwoods, Philadelphia Water Dogs, and Boston Cannons. Only the Archers are the repeat team from last year. It's not exactly Olympic rules. PLL has a two-point line that's 13 yards out, and while it seems like only one little tweak last year, it basically defined the event and the way the game got played. Teams subbed and defended the 2-point like crazy. There was the Atlas who obviously hunted the 2-point like crazy. So it's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be a lot of bit different than what you would end up seeing in the Olympics, but it's still sixes and still fun. I very much enjoyed watching it in person a year ago. So there's two things that are kind of newsworthy recently that I am particularly pumped about for the championship series. First, my favorite part of the whole event is the opportunity that comes with it. Because when it gets played, again, this is in February. It's like the second weekend of February. So a significant chunk of regular roster players aren't going to be available. You have guys committed to their career in indoor pro lacrosse in the NLL. You have guys whose day jobs just won't let them take that much time off. You have guys who are coaching college programs that are going to be just getting underway. And as a result, they can't get away from, you know, that sideline from those first games that they're going to be coaching. And so they won't be able to be there. You know, guys have families. There's things that are going to keep them from spending those 5-6 days down in D.C. So as a result, there are teams who can't necessarily field a full, it's a 12-man roster for the championship series, but those teams who can't field the 12 men from their 25, they can go grab guys from the player pool on a contract that just runs the length of the tournament. It's like a one-week deal, basically. It's a championship series contract. So when people clamor for, we need a combine, we need a place for the player pool guys to show what they can do, this is really it. It's not a ton of spots, so it's not like a true combine, but this is as close as you're going to get for now to guys getting a shot and trying to make the most of it. So far, we've had a few players, I believe it's five, signed to these kind of championship series deals. So the Archers added Patrick Birkinshaw. He's a goalie. And they added, I mean, in sixes, and I guess the way he plays, I guess you would just call him like a forward, midfielder, attackman, whatever. Ronan Jacoby as well. Ronan is an offensive weapon. Birkinshaw was the top goalie recruit in the country coming out of Brunswick. He started his college career at UVA. He transferred to Penn, where he had a really, really good collegiate career. I've seen him play, obviously, quite a few times. He's a Brunswick guy, so I saw him a good amount in high school. I saw him a good amount in college as well. I will say this to see the memory I always have of him playing and why I think he is a goalie who could stick in the PLL. So this goes back a ways now, but I went to see Brunswick play Hill Academy in Birkinshaw's senior year there. I think it was 2018. These might have been the two best teams in North America. You could probably make the case. The game was at night at Brunswick. Brunswick had on their roster, off the top of my head that I can remember, they had Xander Dixon, Wilson Stevenson, Coulter Mackesy, Christian Ronda, Colin Molsheim was on that team, is stacked, and obviously Birkinshaw in that. Hill Academy had Dyson Williams, Brett Dobson, Josh Sawada, Matt Wright, Billy Coyle, also like just a ridiculously loaded team. List goes on and on. The game got played at night in a heavy fog, and Birkinshaw was saving everything. And when I say heavy fog, I mean I was in the press box, and I was trying to do color calling the game, and I could barely see the players on the field. Like I couldn't, you know, if guys were on the opposite sideline, I probably couldn't tell who it was. And Birkinshaw in that kind of conditions was still picking the ball out of the air like it was broad daylight. He gave up 8 goals in that game to one of the best high school teams I've ever seen. And I could barely see the ball moving around on passes and find it on the ground. And he was just stepping the balls and getting top hand to it like it was nothing. Unreal. The Archers' other addition was Ronan Jacoby, as I said, a D3 monster at Wesleyan before he finished his career with a grad year at Rutgers. So sixes is a very offense-forward format, and Jacoby's freshman year is the sort of stat line that makes you want to email like the school SID and make sure it's actually real and not like a mistake on the website. His freshman year, get a load of this, 175 shots. 175 shots in one season. 114 of them on goal. 66 goals. Kid shot just under 38% on 175 shots. Bonkers. If you see that and then you think about what sixes is like, I think you know that Jacoby will probably do just fine. Oh, and both these guys are from Connecticut, which rules. The Water Dogs made 2 adds. Guys, mostly if you're a Water Dogs fan, you probably already know them. Jason Rose in net. He was with the team in training camp. He was their third goalie. He played at Air Force. He also was the guy who joined the Water Dogs during the regular season when Dylan Ward went on leave. So he's a known to the guys on the team, to the coaching staff, and a good trustworthy goalie like that makes him an obvious choice. They also added Kyle Borda, who was on the team for most of the season, was a healthy scratch a bunch of weeks, but Borda played at Fairfield and then had a grad year at Ohio State. He is just a big, athletic, physical midfielder who can kind of get downhill. And in this format, those kind of physically overpowering guys can be real problems for defenses with no poles. you know, I think the Chrome, now the Outlaws, kind of showed that last year with guys like Heacock and Cole Williams, these kind of big bodies who could just gain leverage. Bort is that kind of player from the midfield. And he's a known to Coach Copeland, so he makes sense to add for them as well. And the last ad for the event on the Championship Series contract was the one that probably got the most pub, of course, what the Redwoods added, Ricky Miaison. At one time, the top lacrosse recruit in the country, Miaison played football at Stanford, as I'm sure you, if you're listening to this, you probably know this story by now, but played at Stanford and started his career there at linebacker and was a captain his senior year, played a grad year of lacrosse at UVA, tried to get another year, but was denied a waiver to kind of get an extra year of eligibility by the NCAA. So his career there kind of ended unceremoniously in like November when he couldn't play anymore. Otherwise, honestly, he might have been drafted last year, but you know, with that kind of up in the air, you could see why teams wouldn't use a pick on him. But he was mostly a second midfield line option there for UVA this past year. He is, as you can imagine from what I just told you, a physical freak. He's the captain of a power conference football team at linebacker. Like he's a physical monster. As I kind of think about his athleticism, his speed, his power, and the sixes format, I kind of put like a scenario together in my imagination that I just can't wait for, which is there's no backing up shots in sixes. So imagine a Redwoods opponent takes a shot and misses the cage, and Ricky Miaison picks it up on the end line on that short field, and he just gets to start of the dead sprint down the field against five players, all short sticks, all smaller than him, and the two-point line is 13 yards. Like, good luck. I don't know what you do. I really don't know what you do. So I am excited for those kind of scenarios where he can really get himself going downhill and lean on his just pure power to dominate. So the cool thing about these additions to me is, and again, this is kind of what I said at the top, but someone's going to stick. Last year, Brennan Krebs was a fill-in player for the Archers. Now he's the Whips goalie of the future. Marco Rourke, fill-in player for the Atlas. And then he was on the team on the 25-man, frequently on the 19-man all season. These guys will make the most of the opportunity. They will find a way to get seen there, as short as that time is. And they're like, of those five guys, there's going to be guys who crack a 25-man in the summer. You can bet on it. There just will be. This is an opportunity, and they always perform in it. Or they did last year. You're going to cancel the always. There's one time, but they perform. The second thing I wanted to talk about with the Championship Series that I was excited about, this is more recent news, but the PLL is going to be hosting Women's Pro Lacrosse Sixes Exhibition there with Unleashed kind of as a partner on the 17th, which is the Saturday of the weekend for the Championship Series. So the women will play sixes. It'll be a North versus South All-Star Showcase. Following the game, players are going to host a clinic for youth players, I think at a nearby high school, if I remember correctly. The only names that were in the press release announcing this was Charlotte North, Dana Dobie, and Lizzie Colson. So they're going to be there. But as always with PLL, we don't get all the info. Stay tuned. More to come. So we don't know the full roster maybe of women who are participating. And we don't know who's coaching either. But either way, it's still going to be a very cool event. I think I would venture that Charlotte North is, at this point, a name that is as recognizable, if not more so, than, I don't know, most players in the PLL or in the men's pro game in some lacrosse circles. She's a bona fide face of the sport for men or women at this point. She's on lacrosse broadcasts on ESPN. She's a star on Team USA. She's everywhere. So the PLL is well served to have her at their event. She's going to do them a load of good. And here's kind of, I guess, some of the reasons why I kind of feel that way. And I'm a fan of the showcase event in general. First, as we all know, lacrosse in the Olympics, we're pumped. We're playing sixes. The thing about that is, and I've said it before, but sixes is still really new. And in terms of competitive events that feature players who you'll see in LA in 2028, there really haven't been too many. You've had the World Games in Birmingham a couple years ago. You've had the Championship Series. There needs to be more sixes events for men and women in the next 4 years. It needs to get cranked way up, way more. The NCLL, the National Collegiate Lacrosse League, can I think be part of leading the way on this, since they're a full-blown league that plays sixes for a season, and they've had a couple seasons of that. but we need more sixes in front of more people. LA can't be a first introduction to the format for even longtime lacrosse fans. So this is a start to getting sixes in front of more people more regularly over the next 4 years. The more of this that can get done, the better, so that it just gets played and it's people are comfortable watching it. They're kind of get educated about the way it's going to get played and coached and strategy and all that. So it's not like just this new, what is this thing come the Olympics for people. Second, I appreciate the PLL's effort to lean into the women's pro level game. I'm going to venture a guess here that the demo of a typical PLL fan skews overwhelmingly male, like very overwhelmingly. I'm just guessing, but I don't know. It doesn't seem outlandish for me to suggest that. I think the PLL last year made an effort to grow outside of their typical demo when they added the Bar Down Lounge for tour stops that started the championship series last year. It was a way to capture older fans, not just, you know, look, you're always going to have the 10, 12, 14-year-old, you know, boys coming to these games because they're mega fans or whatever, but you need to do more than that to make money. So Bar Down, you start capturing 21-plus-year-old adults, male and female, to try and have a good time at the game. And I think Bar Down in a lot of places was very successful. I would have called Bar Down a big success over the past year. Growing partnerships with the women's game, with the women's pro players, I think is a way you can try and bring more female fans to the PLL. And ideally in a two-way street, we send a whole lot of fans to watch Athletes Unlimited AU and watch the women play as well. I think everybody wins when you do that. So I think that kind of that partnership there is a way for everybody to get showcased and seen and kind of cross-pollinate those fan bases a little bit. Both sides grow, then, like I said, everybody wins. We'll talk more about the PLL Championship Series as it gets closer. Like the college season, again, it's just about a month away now. It's going to be upon us before you know it. So I can't wait. Speaking of college lacrosse, let's throw it over to some Ivy talk. We have a guest today, an All-American, a Tewarton nominee, an All-Ivy player, a scoring machine, even played some of those Team USA Sixes games down there at the World Games in Birmingham. Today's guest is Matt Brandau. So we're going to throw it over to that interview now. Enjoy. Joining the podcast now is All-American, All-Ivy, Tewarton nominee. He has done it all. Yale attackman, Matt Brandau. Matt, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So just kind of getting right into it, you know, it's now January. We got through fall ball and everything. You know, the season is around the corner. How has the fall and the preseason been going so far for you guys? As I know Ivies are not quite back to practice yet, but, you know, are you getting antsy? Is it you know, upon us here?
Yeah, absolutely. Guys are starting to trickle in this week. I think the whole team is supposed to be here by Monday. That's when classes start, and we're going to hop right into captain's practices. But there's a lot of excitement going around in New Haven right now. My whole house is here. We're very excited. We can't wait to get started. I'm living with the three other guys from my original class that have done the same leave of absence schedule that I have, and we cannot wait to get started with this last ride.
So you mentioned that schedule, and it's kind of unique to you guys in the Ivy and everything, the leave of absence schedule. You guys withdraw from Yale or take the leave in the fall, and that preserves extra semesters of spring eligibility. So kind of just take me through exactly what that means, what that process is like, and yeah, kind of why you decided to go down that road.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Ivy League rules just dictate that you have 8 semesters to finish your 4 seasons of eligibility. When COVID hit, everyone was scrambling. Coach Shea had the foresight to pretty much call that we weren't going to have a season in 2021 when the Ivy League was the only conference that didn't. So pretty much everyone on the team withdrew or took a leave of absence for a couple of semesters. Because, you know, we didn't want to use up those semesters and the eligibility. So when we got back, this was kind of a concept that had been floated around, was taking the falls off and re-enrolling in the spring. And until, I guess, the summer after 2022, you know, we really hadn't thought about it. And then kind of halfway through that summer, we were talking to Coach Shea and some of the other coaches and some of the other guys, and we're thinking, you know, we have 2 semesters left. We and 2 years of eligibility left. We could really work this thing out to get two more seasons at Yale and finish with four full seasons at Yale under our belt. And it was definitely a hard decision, and a lot of thought goes into, you know, delaying graduation from college for another year and, you know, finding things to do to stay active during the fall. But, you know, we put our hearts into this game for a long time. And I think for the four of us, at least, and some guys in the classes below us, it was just the right decision and what we wanted to do. So we're very lucky that we were able to find this path, and that the Ivy League and Yale has allowed us to do it. So, yeah, but it's fun. I can't wait to be back. It feels like I've been at Yale forever, and I kind of have, but, you know, it's worth it for me.
So you said there, you know, you got to kind of find ways to be busy in the fall. What exactly are you permitted to do in terms of being around the team, being around the guys, participating? And or is it just literally like you are on your own? Like you guys are out here and you're going to train and you're going to do whatever, but, you know, you're on an island.
It's a little bit of you're on an island. You're not allowed to do anything where coaches are present, not allowed to do anything in the facilities. You're not supposed to be in the facilities with the guys. I think really in the facilities at all. So it does feel like you're on an island, and, you know, we would be with the guys. And if we had a captain's practice on a practice field that was near us, we'd be there and participating to the best of our ability. But, you know, we don't want to push any rules, and we're, you know, just glad to have this opportunity. And I think the good thing with the group of guys that are on a leave of absence is that everyone has been in the program already for a couple of years and knows what's expected of us. So we actually, I think there were eight of us total on campus or living in New Haven, at least this semester. And we were on our own training schedule away from the team, where we would wake up on some mornings and go do one-on-ones or go practice on our own. Other days we would go lift early in the morning or hit the wall together and things like that. So we were certainly staying busy and active training. But it did definitely stink to know that the guys were going through a fall ball and, you know, going through scrimmages and running sprints and we couldn't be there with them. So that hurts, but, hopefully, or I know they know that, we're doing it because we love them and we want to be with them for as long as we can. So
I guess, you know, I kind of think about it and I think, all right, well, why do it that way? Because I look at like the Princeton seniors, right? I see them, they're all now kind of just, they didn't do the leave of absence route or anything. They finished their time there and then they dispersed to the ACC, to the Big Ten, to schools all over the place. What made you maybe go this route instead of the other way? Like, I'll take a grad year at a different power conference or anything, or did right. you ever consider going that route?
I definitely did consider it. And, you know, that's a very smart route for a lot of people, for those guys. And certainly something that I've thought about a lot is, you know, having a Yale degree and also a grad degree or 1 year MBA or something like that. And that was a big consideration of mine. But at the end of the day, when I was thinking about where I wanted to be and spend my time, you know, I've loved this program since the second that I got here, and I just couldn't see myself playing for any other coach other than Coach Shea or playing with another team on my jersey. And I think that at the end of the day, it was just the group of guys and the group of the coaching staff that brought me back. And, you know, I have the great fortune of having a twin brother who's been at a couple different programs. And he always tells me, just based on how I talk about the program and how, you know, my voice seems to light up when I talk about it, how special it is to me. And I just think that was too special for me to pull away from. And I wanted to finish out my career here. So.
Yeah, you mentioned there, you know, the desire to play for Coach Shea. Tell me what that experience is like in not just in a game environment, but in a practice. How would you describe his kind of coaching style on a day-to-day with you?
Right. Well, he demands the best from you when you're on the field with him at all times. There's no slacking off. We sprint from drill to drill. He has the ultimate respect from every player the second that you step on campus. You know, it can be intimidating as a first year when you get on campus. He can seem scary, but the second, you know, you get in the office with him and it's just him and he starts asking about music tunes or talking about golf and things like that, you can tell he's just happy to be around you. And he's really, like, you know, a father figure for the whole team. He loves us and he takes care of us off the field. Whenever anyone has a problem on campus, whether it's academic, you know, social, off the field, anything family related, we can go to coach and know that we have a man that cares deeply about us as people more than lacrosse players. That being said, obviously he's a genius on the lacrosse field. He's always tinkering with new gadgets to try and mess around with our shot form or see if we can get our shots a little bit faster and things like that. So loves that side of things, but also, you know, just a great X's and O's guy. So he's certainly demanding and demands a lot of respect the second you step on the field, but off the field, he's just a really great guy and a guy that I've spent a lot of time with in the last probably 3 or so years, just hanging out in his office. And a quick example of that is just, you know, when our season got canceled, my buddy Jack Oaken, who's doing the same thing, and I went into his office and sat in there for probably 2.5 or so hours and just played like guess that tune with him and against him for 80s music. And he crushed us, but it was still just a blast to have a couple hours to spend with him before getting sent home. So he's a great guy and a great coach. And I couldn't imagine not playing for another coach in college at this point. So
he is an 80s music guy. Like this, when the Yale pregame mix gets made for each season, does he have a selection or two on there?
He does not.
Does he contribute?
He does not. No, I don't know exactly what his style is. It seems like he likes every kind of music that I've heard him listen to. He can kind of belt songs from everyone. So I don't know if it's just 80s, but when it comes to making the music tape, he definitely does not have any say. And sometimes the songs catch him off guard too. So when he hears it for the first time on the field, it's always an adventure.
When would you say, thinking about the time you spent with him, was he most himself coaching you, whether it was a practice or during a game? But what's that moment where you think, if I had to tell somebody what Coach Shea is like, I'm going to tell him this thing that happened?
That is that's a really tough question, but a good one. It makes me think a lot about, I think, my first year. You know, we lost to Villanova in overtime my first year here, and that was the first game of our season, our opening game. We started with Villanova, and it was the defending national champion team that I wasn't on, and, you know, a group of guys that were hungry to get back and try and repeat and lose the first game. And I remember the Monday practice when we got into the film room for the first time, him, you know, I was expecting, I've seen him throw chairs and stuff, but, you know, he sat down and just talked to us about what he needs to do better and how he thinks that he needs to improve moving forward, and kind of opened the floor to let the guys talk about how we need to improve as players and as a team and come together more. And, you know, we had a great, it's hard to say come to Jesus meeting after one game, but we did have a great, you know, it was an eye-opening, you know, experience or an eye-opening game for a lot of guys that were just feeling like we were national champs. And, you know, especially as a first year, I was like, we're not going to lose a game. They just won the national championship. We're going to be great. But, you know, he's the kind of guy that takes responsibility first and foremost, and then he points the finger inwards, and then he looks at the team as well. So I think that was kind of an eye-opening experience. That being said, I've certainly seen him get on some guys in particular ways in the film room, but yeah, he's certainly a looks in the mirror before coming down on anyone too hard.
So looking now kind of towards, you know, you and kind of the group of guys, the team on the field last year, obviously you have Chris and you have Leo at attack. You guys combined for over 200 points a year ago. All three of you return this year. What kind of stands out about the play of your line mates at attack that you think makes the trio of you work as well as you do together?
Well, I think the most important thing with the three of us is that we all feel like we can take all the positions on the attack at any time. Whether that's, you know, one of us bumping to the inside and the other bumping behind the goal, the quarterback, or one of us being a slashing dodger. I think especially those two guys, they're so skilled and they're such hard workers and students of the game that they're able to plug and play anywhere on the offense. So, you know, Lyon's freshman year, he wasn't much of a dodger, a carrier, but now that he's fully confident, it seems like he's fully confident dodging. He's one of the best dodgers on the field at all times. And you saw that last year when he really exploded and had such a great year. And Leo's always just been, you know, Leo, he's been a great quarterback since the day one, his first year, he stepped right on the field. We asked him to fill a big role, as a starting attackman, and he took it and with absolutely no fear. He's just been himself, and you know, he plays like a bulldog for sure. He plays angry, but he's tremendously skilled. And they've done a great job as they've gotten older too of putting their teammates in positions to succeed and talking to guys on the field and communicating and, you know, celebrating the team as a whole. And it's been really fun to watch them develop since their first year into complete, you know, full players and leaders on the team as well. So having three of us down there, it feels like there's three quarterbacks and three leaders at any time. And it doesn't really matter which one of us is hot or if one of us is cold, and we're all going to have each other's back and support each other. So it's a great feeling.
You know, as I watch you guys play and really the whole team, it feels like you guys are driven to play with kind of an edge about you. You know, I think of like, you know, there's the moment last year where Leo beats his man and scores and then pats his defender on the butt after he does it. I know I am at quite a few Yale games. I know when you guys come out of the locker room, you run right across the midfield line and you let the other team hear a couple words or two. Where does that come from? Where does that kind of that approach to the game come from for you guys as a group?
That's a great question. And I think part of it is a recruiting thing as well with coach, where he looks for some angry guys, which is pretty funny. And, you know, we are a team of a bunch of really good, and you could say this, I'm sure, about any team in Division One or even any division, but we're a team of a bunch of really competitive guys. And, you know, we spend all fall playing really hard, or all fall and all start of the spring playing really hard and just beating the heck out of each other every practice. You know, we don't have, for a long time, we don't have any light practices where we're not a lot of contact. We're beating each other into the dirt for a lot of time, and it builds up a lot of anger and tension. And it's always fun coming out in February and in the first game and having somebody in a different color or different team jersey across from you and not your buddy who you've been training with for 6 or so months. So it's nice to be able to whack somebody else and talk a little bit to somebody else. But I think it also comes from just, you know, the drive that these guys have to be the best. And like, especially when it comes to, you mentioned Leo and Lyons, like those guys are out there working harder than anyone else. They shoot every day, all off season. You know, we keep each other accountable by texting each other what we're doing, but I really don't need to do that because I know every time I'm going to text them, they're going to say shot every day this week, did footwork every day this week, they're going to be on it. So those guys have a will to be the best and they want it more than anything. And I think that's what gives them the fire.
And it feels like, you know, as you kind of describe both the coaching style and kind of the group of guys that you have, that this locker room to me sounds like it is pretty player led. Like it's, you know, the players are the ones setting the goals. The players are the ones who kind of lay out where they want to be throughout the year. Is that fair to say?
I think so. I think every year for my time here, you know, Coach Shea has relied on us to steer the boat where we want to be. If we lay an egg during a practice and coach is not afraid to kick us out of practice, and then we'll come right back on the field and have a player's practice. You know, there have been times where coaches has let us correct the ship and kind of been hands off. And I think he's very understanding of when he needs to take the reins and also when he lets us kind of handle our business. But yeah, we have great leadership. I think our captain this year, Patrick Hackler, is doing a phenomenal job. And I think, you know, there's a lot of smiles in the locker room, despite the anger that happens on the field. So it's definitely a brotherhood. And just like brothers, we can beat the heck out of each other and then come back in the locker room and smile and hug and love. So it's definitely player led. But, you know, coach is never afraid to put his hands on it and steer us the right direction.
And so with that, what goals have you guys set for the year as the, you know, the leaders are kind of the team? What goals do you guys have for the season?
You know, our only goal, or at least the only goal that we try and talk about, is that we want to overachieve based on what we think we can do. So when we look back at the last couple seasons, we've had a tremendous amount of talent. We've had some really great games, but, you know, we've also had some really bad games. And I think one of our main goals this year is to be consistently putting our best performance possible on the table. And then it'll get better as the year goes along, as it does for every team. But you know, we just want to make sure that at the end of the year, we're not looking back and saying, I think we could have just done a little bit better. We could have won one more game like we have the last couple of years. And, you know, obviously, you know, teams lose games and we're going to have some performances that aren't up to our standard. But the most important thing is that we're able to correct ourselves. And, you know, it's not about winning the first game. It's about winning the last one. So I think we all kind of know where we want to go. But most importantly, we just want to get better every day and make sure that we don't feel like we're losing any days and underachieving.
Yeah. And you talk about, you know, the game you want to win is the last game. Obviously, you know, it's how do you guys balance and how do you approach the idea of we want to be playing on Memorial Day, but today is, you know, as we're talking right now, it's January 9th. So how do you stay on January 9th also thinking we want to be playing on whatever it is, May 20, whatever Memorial Day is this year?
Right. I think that everyone has it in the back of their minds, but we also know that it's a process to get there. And every team uses the word process, but, you know, we know that it is a daily battle to wake up and will yourself to do something to get yourself and the team better, whether that's waking up and stretching a little extra because you're tight, or, you know, doing a little bit of extra footwork because you're not feeling like you're moving well. There are a bunch of things that we can do every day to get better. And I think that our team, and especially our, you know, our leadership through Hackler and through a bunch of the seniors, has really instilled that in the entire team, that if we want to be the best, then there are no days off. And it is a one day battle, that you have to choose to win every day. And, I think we've been doing a pretty good job of that. And I think that I hope that it continues into the spring. And you definitely can't look at the big picture too often, but if we keep winning one day battles, then I think, we're putting ourselves in the best possible position.
And looking now just to you as an individual this year, but I don't know if you're aware of the milestones that are in reach for you, but with 21 goals, 35 assists and 58 points, you would become Yale's all-time leader in all three of those categories. Did you know that you were that close to that many records all at once?
I think I had an idea, but I'm not exactly sure the number totals, but, you know, I'm very fortunate in that I've had a productive career and I've been helped by a lot of guys throughout my entire time. So it's more about, you know, the team goals and my individual goals, but, yeah, it's pretty neat to hear that and to think about that in the long term for sure.
And just so you know, the only names that are in front of you in these records right now are John Reese, Ben Reeves, and Jackson Worrell, who was a line mate of yours. Yeah. So is it daunting to hear that like the only players in front of you in Yale production are three all-time greats?
It's an honor to be up there with them. Those are three of the best players, you know, potentially probably the three best players that have ever come through Yale across since entire history. And it's an absolute honor and quite humbling to be mentioned with those guys. You know, Jackson was like my older brother when I got to campus and really took me under his arm and helped me become the player that I am now. And watching Ben in high school was awesome, and hearing stories and watching film of Reese has been also a treat. So it's certainly an honor to be up there with those guys.
And so I want to look outside of Yale for a second. Lacrosse, we all got the wonderful news, is going to be part of the Olympics. It's going to be played in the sixes format. In terms of competition at a global level, you are one of the few people who has actually played sixes like in international competition. You were on the World Games team in Birmingham for Team USA. First, I guess, what was your reaction and what were your thoughts on the news of lacrosse in the Olympics? And second, how did you feel playing sixes at that level? What did you think of the format and kind of that way of playing lacrosse?
Right. Well, first off, it's incredibly exciting for this sport. You know, it's a blast to play sixes, and I'm very excited that that's the format that'll be shown. I think that, well, it's not the lacrosse that we see on a day-to-day basis in the spring. It's so much fun, and it shows the entirety of the sport, the fast pace, the fun. You know, you have to play all over the field. Guys are picking up ground balls and offensive players playing defense, defensive players playing offense. It's so fun. And it really showcases the talent and the level of enthusiasm and skill these guys have everybody has for the sport. So it's just incredibly exciting. And then when it comes to the actual format, if you can tell, I've loved it. you know, during some captain's practices this fall, the Yale guys played it and we had a blast. like I said, it teaches you to be a better lacrosse player and not just focus on, you know, being a better shooter, being a better attackman. It makes you think about playing off ball defense, which helps your offense off ball. So, you know, it just puts you in a lot of uncomfortable situations. And also it's so fun to get up and down and a great workout. So, it's incredibly fun. And when it comes to the world games and being able to compete at that level, it was really an incredible experience being able to play with so many, players that, you know, I've gone through college idolizing. Obviously Canada was very good and took it to us a little bit. You know, it was really, really cool to be able to compete for Team USA and to play against those guys, who are obviously the best in the world at what they do, and play with guys that are the best in the world at what they do. So it was a treat, and it's fun to watch, you know, how guys in the PLL and in college ball and in the NLL take their talents in those games to sixes. Like, it's incredible to see the styles of play transform onto sixes, and it was a lot of fun, and I'm really excited and hope to have the opportunity to further explore sixes in the Olympics.
Yeah, you mentioned it's like Team Canada in that event. I was talking with another lacrosse media person who made the case, I think very convincingly, and I think it's, I wouldn't even argue it, but even like 40 years from now, people are going to look at that Team Canada and think it legit might be the best sixes team that ever played.
Like, they were phenomenal. They had, you know, everybody on that team was a threat on offense, and everybody on that team would play hard defense. And, you know, when you take the box skills and the field skills of all those players and you put them in that format, it was pretty deadly. So,
yeah, I mean, it was like prime Josh Byrne, prime Zach Currier, prime Dane Smith. Like, it was just unreal.
It was pretty ridiculous. Watching Teets one-handed behind the back on Twitter still haunts me to this day, but that is just an insane lacrosse play. So not much you can do about that.
You know, you mentioned some of these guys, and you mentioned the way PLL guys bring their play. The PLL is probably something in your future. You started to think about playing on the weekends in the summer wearing a PLL uniform yet?
It's fun to think about a little bit, but I'm so focused on this spring. I can't wait to get back on the field with Yale that I really haven't put too much thought into it. Obviously, they're going to need it's going to take an army to peel me away from this game. So I'm going to be in lacrosse for as long as I possibly can. But I haven't thought too much about playing pro ball yet. So
having, you know, and again, with the sixes, and you mentioned also the NLL skill, do you have much box experience? Would you try and find ways to get into box to try and see if that would enhance your game for the pro level and even your prospects at making a Team USA 4 years from now?
Yeah, I don't have a ton of box experience, but I have played a couple seasons, a couple winters in Baltimore. So maybe not the best box across the ball time, but it's definitely still a lot of skilled guys out there. So, and I was very fortunate to also be picked up by the Mammoth in this past NLL draft, which was, you know, talking with their leadership was a great chance that they took on me based on the skill set. But, you know, I love watching it. I love playing, you know, when Yale and at school, when we play, we call it speed in the gym, but it's basically box across. So, it's a blast, and I love the game. I love the skill set. I love the nuances and the savvy. And I think it is so important to be able to go in there and perform and pick up those skills and translate them to the field. So I definitely am hoping to continue pursuing box. And like I told the Mammoth, it's going to take an army to peel me away from the game. So anything I can possibly do to contribute to that organization, I absolutely will.
All right, I got a couple of quick ones, sort of cool. Fill in the blanks here, rapid fire to close us out. The best pizza in New Haven is at?
I'm a Pepe's guy. It's close. Sally's is great, but I am a Frank Pepe's guy.
I wasn't going to skew you. I am a Sally's man. Okay. My wife likes modern, but yeah, Pepe's is great. I will always be a Sally's man myself.
Modern is fantastic. Yeah, they're all great. There's no bad pizza in New Haven.
The defender who gives me the most trouble is?
I've certainly struggled with Adler, Gavin Adler from Cornell in the past couple of years. He was absolutely a nightmare for me. So he gave me a lot of trouble, and glad to see him playing in the PLL now, so I have one more year without him.
The team that I always feel good against when I'm playing is?
Oh man, this is a good call out, huh? Geez. I would say I played against, geez, that stinks. You know, there's a lot of any Ivy team I get super excited for, and those games are always so fun that I think it's hard not to feel good and excited going into those games. So I'm gonna kind of cop out of that and say any Ivy team.
The guy in the locker room that I trust most with the aux cord is.
Oh, well, it's not Eric Platten. It would probably be Jack Okun, who's also one of my classmates and roommates, but he'll throw a mix of everything at us, and it's always great.
Is the warm-up mix his responsibility? Is or is that a team effort?
It's a team effort, but he plays a big part in it every year.
The amount of money it would take you to jump in net and try and stop a time and room shot from Thomas Bragg is.
Depends from how far he is, but it's a lot of zeros after the first digit. That kid shoots the ball hard.
In a single word, this year's Yale team is.
That's a great one. I'm gonna say exciting. I think it's gonna just be a lot of fun. I think the sky's the limit for us, so hopefully it's a good show and we're able to put on some good games for everyone.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me, Matt. It's been great having you. Best of luck to you this spring. This has been good.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, that was really good. I really enjoyed talking with Matt. I think that Yale team, that Yale locker room, that coaching staff, that it all kind of fits together. The way they play, the way they coach, there's very much a personality and a type of person and type of player that fits there. I think you kind of heard Matt talk about kind of the way they're competitive, the way some of those guys are angry, and the way that Coach Shea finds guys like that fit, that mold of player, that type of player who can take that kind of coaching and can flourish in that kind of environment. Because I live nearby Yale, so I tend to see a lot of their games. And there's something you kind of notice with them is their sideline, whenever basically anything happens in a game that's emotional, charging, exciting, whatever, the leaders on that team will go up and down the sideline and tell guys, reset, reset. You just scored a huge goal, reset. Get back to center, focus on what's next. They just scored a huge goal, reset. Big turnover, whatever it is, reset. Everything is okay. Get back to the regular emotional level. Go out and compete again. Don't ever get high. Don't ever get low. It's always big play happens, reset. And I think you kind of see the way these guys balance that with playing with emotion. I think you kind of hear Matt kind of describe the way those guys hold each other accountable. And I think they're going to be an exciting team this year. So thank you again to Matt Brandau for joining the podcast. Thank you for joining. That's going to be it for today. Again, please leave a like, subscribe, download, share it if you like it. And I thank you again for sticking around with me. And we'll see you next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.